Hello and a warm welcome to Food and Music here on the Isle of Wight. My name is Paul Bell Chambers and this podcast is inspired by the hospitality sector and also the food and drink producers that we have on the island. And I think it's an important part, or certainly a part of why the island was given a UNESCO biosphere status recently. So there are some exciting things going on. It's very vibrant. And I'll be talking to many of the people involved in it from the food and drink side and also in the hospitality sector. We'll try and understand what they do, how they do and why they do it, what got them into it, and try and learn a little bit about them and get some music selection from them as well. So I hope you enjoy the episodes and enjoy the series. Welcome to the second episode of the podcast, and this time I'm talking to Andrew Hodgson, who's the owner of the Isle of Wight Meat Company. I first got to know the business in 2021 when I needed to find a meat supplier for my business, and one of the first ones I found was this business, the Isle of Wight Meat Company. I spoke to Ricky McBride, who's in charge of sales and marketing, and he took me on a tour of the farm and the butchery, and it was an impressive way to start. I really love the fact that meat is raised on the farm and ends up in the butchery and is basically follows their field to fridge motto, and it's available across the island directly through shops and through farm shops. I wanted to meet Andrew to get to know him and to understand more about why he set up the Isle of Wight Meat Company, and I was able to combine the two with a chat for the podcast. He has a very quiet approach to things, but he is very dedicated to the farm, as you will hear. And he's also keen to grow the business as and when possible. But it's important to him that it's the context of the community, within the context of the community and the economy of the island. So we met for about 45 minutes and we chatted about the business and other things. And this is the first part of the interview. Good morning, Andrew. Good morning. To meet you finally.
And you.
And I've also got Ricky McBride here, who looks after the marketing side of marketing and sales side of.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, great stuff. So take a start from here. So, Andrew, what's the history behind the Isle of Wight Meat Company? How did it come about?
The Isle of Wight Meat Company is a fairly new business, started in 2019, but it's actually part of our farming business, and I've been farming on the Isle of Wight since 1986 and set up my own farming business at Cheverton Farm at Shorewell in 1992.
Wow.
So although the Meat Co is a relatively new branch of that, yeah, it's a business that's been running on the island for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. So what got you into farming? Is that a family thing or just...
What got me into farming, I think, was coming to the island for Christmas and staying with my uncle, who had a farm at and still has a farm over at Whitwell, and aged right. About 3 years old, getting up on Christmas morning and helping him milk some cows. And for whatever reason, I thought, that's what I want to do.
Oh.
My father at the time was also working on a farm, but didn't have his own farm. But after many years of hard work, managed to buy his own farm in Sussex.
Okay.
And then in 86, he sold up and moved to the Isle of Wight. So I have got farming. I've always been going to be a farmer, like a stick of rocket says farmer all the way through me.
Brilliant.
And I've never actually wanted to do anything else, although during my lifetime I have done a number of other jobs, but it's always come back to farming.
Brilliant. That's fabulous. It's nice to be able to do what you've got the passion for.
You certainly couldn't do this job if you didn't have the passion for it. I don't think you do it for the money, but certainly it's a job that you have to have the passion for, and when it goes well, it's the best job in the world.
Well, I can remember when I came to visit and meet Ricky for the first time, he took me around the farm. I've had, as a chef, I've had suppliers before, and back in Oxfordshire there was actually a butcher who actually developed a farm shop and an abattoir and all the rest of it. So he was working on producing his own meat, but also then working with lots of other suppliers locally and further afield like Norfolk and Somerset for other bits and pieces.
But yeah, you never really got the tour.
Yeah.
You just got to see the farm shop or the butchery. Yeah. Quite a big operation. I know you've got a good size operation here too. Mm. But it is fascinating with all the animals, obviously the primarily the lamb, the beef and the pork, which you produce here, which is fantastic.
Yeah, we grow them all here.
Yeah.
So, yes, and that's really where the meat came from. I've spent nearly all of my farming life producing meat, lamb and beef predominantly, contracts to supermarkets, all very impersonal. And in 2018, really 19, we had no control over the price of what we were selling at all. Yeah. So I thought we might try and change that a little by putting in our own meat company so I could actually take it one step further rather than being a commodity supplier. I could be a retailer and have some control. So really that's where it came from.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. I know you do click and collect here, or shop and collect, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's through Monday and Friday. And is that literally from your average consumer in the street through to outlets like restaurants and shops?
Absolutely. We have a fair range of markets because we need to market the whole body of beef. I mean, one of the things that we do differently really is all of the animals are from the Isle of Wight. Mm. That's our main remit. We're a regional food producer, our region being the Isle of Wight, most defined region really in the country because it's the only one completely surrounded by water.
Yeah.
So when we want some more beef, we slaughter the whole animal. So to get 6 kilos of fillet steak, we have a whole body of beef.
Yeah.
So we have to market everything that's there. So we found that that actually if we have a range of customers as well, and we do doorstep deliveries to private individuals, private households, a lot of restaurants and some catering facilities, pubs, and some wholesale meat.
Okay.
And I almost say anything in between. So that's our market.
That was the first part of the interview with Andrew, and his first choice of music is Cats in the Cradle by Harry Chapin, and his comment is, it's a bit of a tearjerker, but it's something to do with being a workaholic. I'll leave you to work that one out. So welcome back, and this is part two, and I started talking to Andrew about expansion and farm shops, and this is what he had to say.
I guess one of the new things I noticed from my perspective, when we first moved to the island about 2 years ago, so I've got kind of familiar with some of the local farm shops and the retail outlets, and there was obviously, was it Brown Riggs?
Yep.
Before, so that's now part of your
operation. Yes, a year ago we took over what was previously known as Brown Riggs Farm Shop and set up the Isle of Wight Meat. The Isle of Wight Farm Shop. As you can see, my brand is that regional Isle of Wight.
Yes, so absolutely.
That's why we try and it's not all about me, it's all about the region, really. So we took over the Isle of Wight Farm Shop because I realised that although we'd set up as an internet-based butchery, that meat is a very tangible item. And I think that certain people like to come and see it, not touch it, but see it, talk to the butchers, find out the heritage of it. And we're all about the heritage of this meat. We're all about the local food, the low food miles, the high welfare. And if we can get all of that over to people, they understand why our meat could be a little bit different from other people. So we took over the Isle of Wight Farm Shop a year ago. And so I had to very quickly learn a little bit about retail as somebody who'd spent his life as a commodity producer.
Yeah.
A lot to learn. Actually, it's far too much for me to learn. So I've got some really good team over there who do understand retail and do that for me.
Yeah, it's a completely different beast.
Yeah. So the shops have got a butchery in it, selling our own range of meat. As I say, from the farm here, we do our own beef, lamb and pork. But also we do chickens. There's no commercial poultry producer on the island any longer. So we source our chickens from one free-range farm just outside Bath. Yeah. All of our chickens come from there. We do some goats that come from a smallholder in Shorewell. Mm. And we're just branching at the moment into doing some deer. that come from New Coast Farm on the Isle of Wight, so we're just getting licensed to do that. So it's not all about our farm. If we can get really good quality products from other island producers, we'll market their food.
You're almost becoming a hub in some respects.
That's exactly what we want to be. Yeah. We want to be a route to market for good quality animals, meat, but also at the farm shop, we sell other products as well.
Yeah.
If we can get it on the Isle of Wight and it's really good quality, then we'll put it in the farm shop. Yeah. Now, just because it's produced on the Isle of Wight doesn't mean we sell it. We want to be happy that it fits in with our thinking. And if there's good items, we can't do everything on the Isle of Wight. I can't pretend that our bananas and our grapefruits come from the Isle of Wight.
If you can get them now.
Yeah. So we also, you know, source products from wherever we have to do it.
No, I mean, that's something I'm noticing with some of the other businesses on the island, is that it's not just what their speciality is. They're also bringing in product from other businesses on the Isle of Wight. Not necessarily to try and be all things to all people, but just to have that extra range that complements what they're doing. So I think
that's what we try to do. Yeah. I can't compete with Mr. Tesco's on a range of 47 different sorts of yogurt. That's not what we're trying to do at all. But what we're trying to do is, if there's a product there and we like it and we believe in it and we trust it, then we're going to put it on the shelf there and try and share that with other people.
So that was Andrew talking about expanding in a complementary way and opening the farm shop. And it extends his core business around the meat and brings in other brands as well from the island and beyond. So go back in time. This is a trip down memory lane for him from when he was a student on his first farm. And this is David Bowie with Life on Mars. Great to hear Bowie again. In this part, Andrew and I talked about the implications of expanding the business, what that's meant for him, and then also from the business point of view, the wider economy, the impact of the war and everything else that's going on there, plus what it means from his perspective producing a quality product such as meat.
So given all of the changes that you've gone through in the last 2 years that I'm aware of, and taking on things like shop, the retail side, I mean, what are the main challenges you now have as a business, given the economic climate we now find ourselves in?
Well, financially, business is always under pressure. I think in all the time I've been farming, we've always been under financial pressure. As a farmer, we've diversified quite significantly, and if we hadn't diversified into some other businesses, we would definitely not survive some of the challenges that we've had economically along the years. So I think, like any other business, we're under financial pressure constantly. But also, I've found that running the shop and running the Meat Co. is requiring a whole different skill set to the ones that I'm more used to. Most of my lifetime has been involved in farming, working with the type of people that want to drive big machinery, work with animals, drive lorries, work 20 hours a day, and I understood what made this sort of person tick. Now I'm employing some fantastic butchers and a whole different team of people, and I've had to learn a lot about how to get this type of business to really flow. I always think my main job through my life has really been logistics. That's what I do. Yeah. I can grow a crop of corn so long as I've got the right things in the right place at the right time. And that's what I do, and that's what I'm trying to do.
And I think fundamentally a lot of business do come down to how you manage the input, process it, and get it out into the marketplace. It's not about the actual process of what you do.
Yeah.
Because like you say, I mean, how many staff have you got here, because you've got the butchery?
So we've expanded the staff hugely. We have about 20 people in total working in Isle of Wight Meat Co. and the Isle of Wight Farm Shop. But that's in addition to the farm staff and the other staff that work for us here.
But that then brings it, you talked about the skill set.
Oh yes, I now have...
It's the man management and the people management and all of that.
I now have an HR department. Yeah. I now have an assistant manager who helps me run it, because it's far too much for me to do. Yeah. and I can't do that. No. Can't do that
properly. Oversight is even difficult. You'll have an awareness. And I get it, because I've worked in big organisations. Mm. I worked for a company that was 150,000 people worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just one number in the middle of all of that. Yeah. It was great fun, but I prefer to be doing what I'm doing now, which is...
You've got
more control on it, but... Yeah.
But I think, when I think about it, that's a number of staff, that's a number of people relying on this little farm here, and all of these other businesses that we do. So they're not separate businesses, but all these things are just chains in a link. I mean, we run the farm, and we continue to do that, and we grow crops across the island, and we have five other farms on various agreements. We don't own them.
Just partnerships.
Whatever. Yeah. But that's growing the food that's linked to the animals that we rear here, that's linked to the meat co that's supplying to the shop, that's supplying the restaurants, and it's all chains, links in a chain. I mean, we also here have holiday cottages on the farm for people to come and stay, which my wife Claudia runs the holiday cottages. We've recently set up a mountain bike track here. My youngest son is a professional mountain biker, so every Saturdays and Sunday we're inundated with people out here to ride bicycles. It's fantastic because it doesn't compromise the farming at all. No. It's hand in hand, and actually it opens it up to people. They can see what we're doing.
No.
So it's quite a diverse business, but it's all linked. Nothing is standalone. It's all comes back.
It's all integrated with as part of the overall direction. Well, the plan and the direction for the business is brilliant. I don't know. I mean, I think the economic climate is, I don't know. It's one of those tricky ones where I think we're kind of, obviously with the soft veg, the salads and the tomatoes and all that sort of stuff, the peppers. Everybody's looking for excuses as to why it's happening, but I think it's just fundamentally a part of the huge change that's going on from Eastern Europe right the way through.
Well, I mean, you said, what are the pressures? My timing was absolutely fantastic. I set up in 2019. I don't mean to make excuses, but we were all obsessed with Brexit. Brexit got completely top trumped by COVID.
Yeah.
And then just as we're pulling through that, we've got this war in Ukraine, which has a massive impact on all of our lives, energy and food. I'm involved in both. So what a time to try and adapt. We've had to really try and change what we do. Yeah. And everybody's under pressure. We know who our market is out there. And I think it's people who are interested in value for money.
Yeah.
And we can be perceived as a farm shop, as I think farm shops are seen as being an expensive place to shop. Actually, when you look into it, that's not true at all. No. I've been and looked at that. With the meat co, we say from field to... Sorry, what do we say?
Field to fridge. Farm to fridge. Okay, right. We got there in the end.
Good job I know what I got going on. Yeah. We say from field to fridge. We try to have that where we have not control of, but we have an input into the whole process from the animal being born right the way through to it being in your fridge ready to cook. That enables us to actually have a certain amount of independence, which manages to cut out some of the middlemen, which means that we can deliver a high quality item without it being too expensive. Yeah. We can't compete price-wise with the imported mass-produced food. I know that. I would never try. We're not producing the same product.
I don't think we've been able to do that for decades.
We never will be able to do it here. The cost is you pays your money, you take your choice, as they say. Financially, that imported food is going to be cheaper, but it has another cost, albeit that to do with welfare, to do with social costs of the countries, to do with environmental impacts of it. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but you've got to question how it can come over at such a different price.
I agree, and I think we've all got to ask ourselves that question anyway, as a purchaser. You know, it's not just an issue for you as a producer, it's what we're doing in our own kitchens and where we're getting stuff from, because I think the impact that we have individually makes a big difference. And I think if the mindset was turned 180 degrees to focus on what we could do locally, then I think think we might start to see a change, but the trouble is it's that pound that people want to spend to get as much for as they can.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're very fortunate that we live in a society who has so much choice. So I'm not saying we should stop importing food. Yeah. It would be impossible. We wouldn't be able to feed everybody in the UK. Yeah. But I'm saying there's a choice there. All I try to highlight is the difference between the products. If you've got two bits of meat on the shelf and one's more expensive than the other, you're probably going to buy the cheaper one. But you've got to understand why and what you're getting. So actually, bizarrely, as a butcher, we're saying, eat less, which doesn't really sound a very good economic model for the business. But what we're saying is eat less, but be more discerning about the meat that you buy.
Yeah.
And then I think you'd get a better quality product and enjoy it more and justify that expense.
Yeah. I agree. And you can say the same about all sorts of things. I've heard the same said about wine.
Yeah.
Instead of buying cheap bottles, which are great if you want a hangover. But if you want a decent bottle of wine, and spend an extra £5 and drink it slowly.
And enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So that was an interesting insight to some of the things that have personally affected Andrew in terms of different skills and everything else needed to run a growing business. And then obviously the wider implications of the economy and the war in Ukraine and everything else that's impacted everybody's business. So, going back to his student days, here's Dr. Feelgood with Milk and Alcohol. I wonder why he wanted that one. Well, it was good to hear Dr. Feelgood again. And now we're coming up to the fourth part of the interview. And I really wanted to get into it a bit more detail about tracing the provenance of the meat, because that's an area that's always fascinated me. And I think it's an area that we don't necessarily always understand as consumers. So this may go on for probably a little bit more, but I think once you get through it, it's actually quite an interesting thing to listen to and understand how they can tell you exactly where that piece of meat came from, how old it was, and all the other bits and pieces that go with it. And I think it's actually quite fascinating, and I think it's possibly something we should be more aware of it. So I've let it run because I think it is interesting to hear. So here we go.
Thank you for the comments about the farm to the fridge. I think my next question is really about how you actually communicate that to your customers, whether they're the restaurants or the actual end customer. How can they find that out? How does the piece of meat come from the field through the abattoir and then to the counter and then to their fridge?
So what we try and be as a business is totally open with anybody. We, I think, including yourself, have been to the farm before, had a tour around the farm, a snapshot of what we're doing, admittedly, and a tour around the meat plant that shows it. But as I say, we have the links in the chain. So if I just walk you through briefly what we're doing. So with our cattle, and I work with the cattle at the moment, we actually don't breed any cattle here. Mm-hmm. We buy all of our cattle in. So we either buy reared calves at about 4 months old that are reared by a chap over at Atchison for us, a calf rearer there, and then they'd come onto the farm at about 4 months old. And they are out in the fields grazing grass, as you would expect, through the summer, in the sheds during the winter. We've got Cheverton's a very dry farm, so we can run some cattle outside all of the time. But we feed them on grass. We're not the best grass growing farm on the island. It's fairly dry out here, so we will always boost that with cereals. We're an arable grower as well, so our own cereal crops also are fed. So we feed grass and corn to our stock. And what we do is we buy in reared calves that will be 50% beef breed, heifers and bull calves. And then we buy what are called single suckled calves from herds on the Isle of Wight. So they're born out in the field, live with mother for about 8 to 9 months of their lives, suckling milk, eating grass. You can see them all around the island. And then at that point, when they're weaned, we buy them from those farms. So we're buying in different breeds, girls and boys, and different sizes coming from different systems. And we then have to farm those cattle in slightly different ways, depending on breed, size, sex, to make sure that the that they are all getting to a state where they are the right size, with the right amount of fat cover, with the right amount of marbling in the meat, the right ratio of meat to bone. So we farm them in slightly different ways, some indoors for longer than others, some outside all their lives. Once they get to the state, as we say, as finished, that means as good as they're going to get, fit for slaughter, we then select some stock, and we do this once a fortnight. We send a load off to the abattoir every other week. Right. And the load always has some pigs, it usually has a few goats, always has some sheep and some cattle on it. Now, there's no abattoir on the Isle of Wight, so they have to take a ferry trip and go to the nearest abattoir, which is at Farnborough, and they're slaughtered there, and then they come back straight into our meat plant. So our meat plant's on the farm here. When I say meat plant, it's a butchery, really. Yeah. A relatively large building that's temperature and humidity controlled. It was, I believe, the first bespoke dry aging plant to be built in the UK. Quite a few in England, quite a few were adapted, but we were just building ours at the right time, so we put that in. Dry aging means that we control the humidity as well as the temperature. And at that point, what we try and do is take it really slowly. What I mean by that is we want to get the best out of these animals, get the best potential. Because the best animal in the world, if it's not grown properly when it's alive, if it's not treated properly, if it's not slaughtered properly, if it's then not hung, you've got to look after it at every stage to get it right through to the person who's going to cook it. Mm-hmm. And then you hope that they cook it properly to realise that potential. Yeah. And then when they have cooked it properly, and you've got to realise how many people are involved in this, producing this fantastic bit of meat, you've got to eat it properly. Mm. Not smother it in tomato ketchup and lose the taste. But there's a lot of stages to this process. It doesn't happen by magic. It seems that way, but there's a lot of control. No. So once the meat gets into our plant, we make sure that we don't rush it through. We hang the meat long enough to make sure that it's tenderized, that we've maximized the flavor there. So our lambs are hung for a minimum of 14 days before being butchered. And our cattle, it depends a little bit on the cuts, but our sort of signature really is 40-day dry-aged ribs of beef. All our prime cuts of beef and our steaks are all hung for 40 days. Fillet steak, we wouldn't hang for that long. Yeah. It doesn't benefit from it at all, fillet, but other steaks do. So it's a bespoke process, and each bit is treated individually. Mm. Once it's hung, once it's there, obviously the skill to a butcher and the best butcher to make sure that it's cut in the best way.
Yeah.
And then from there, we've had some control over every stage of the process to that point, up to the point of delivery, to whoever the customer might be.
Right. So at any point, somebody could ask, where in the process is that animal? Because each animal has a number, I presume.
Absolutely. So our animals, one thing that I'm passionate about is, having put all that into it, is the traceability of these animals. I mean, we were one of we became farm assured long before Red Tractor was a thing.
Yeah.
We became farm assured in the first year that it started, which I think was in 1992. So we've always been very transparent in our production methods, and if people ask me questions about it, I'm very quick to grab them and take them up to the bull barns or take them around the fields to show we're trying to do. We were organic for a number of years. We're not organic now. It's to me, it's a marketing line. We use antibiotics. We hardly use any, but if an animal needs them, we treat them. It's to do with welfare.
Yeah.
It's all about the welfare. Here, the animals have to go to slaughter, but up to that point, you make sure that you give them the best that you can, because then they perform the best for us as well.
That's fascinating, and I think it's good, because I think people don't necessarily understand that process.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to pick up a little black plastic, cling filmed, heat sealed bag that has some raw meat in it, and you have absolutely no clue how that's got from the field, wherever that might be, to the supermarket or the shop or wherever it is. And I think it's great that you're doing that.
Our piece of meat in a packed bag, as you say, that's on the shelf or delivered to your door, will always have the information on it, which will include, for our beef, it will include an ear tag number. Yeah. And that ear tag number means we can trace that back. And before the animals, believe it or not, every bovine animal, every cow has a passport. And that passport has more information about that cow on it than your passport does, that allows you in and out of the country. And every time we keep a copy of the passport. And so if you want to look at the ear tag number and come back, I can tell you the date of birth of that animal, the breed, I can actually tell you its mother's ear tag number. I can tell you every place that it's been on during its life. And that traceability is there all the way. And actually we do the same with the food, with the corn that they're fed and the cereals, we can trace that right back to the batches.
It's amazing, and I think that just highlights its logistics.
It's all about logistics.
You know, especially when you're actually storing that amount of data as well. And you know, it's not just a piece of paper. There's a lot of data that has to sit behind that has to go on a computer somewhere and all the rest of it. So I think that's fantastic. Thank you for explaining that. I think people will be probably a bit surprised to hear that that's what goes on, because they just think it's a field, it's got cows in it. Somehow they get from there and they go onto a plate.
Yes.
And it magically happens.
Well, that is what happened, but some of the time we a little bit of work goes into it.
I'm not decrying the work at all. I think it's fantastic. I mean, I couldn't do it. I mean, I have enough just managing what I do, from time to time. But that's a fantastic. Thank you very much for taking us through that, because I think that's an insight people probably haven't had or heard before. So that's great.
Good.
Well, there we go. I think that was quite enlightening, really. It was for me. Maybe I'm just a bit of a geek, but there's always something I really wanted to get a bit more in detail with and understand. And I think Andrew sort of kind of gave us a really good explanation of how far he could go. And I love the idea of each of these animals having a passport that's got more information on it than our own passports, which I find fascinating. So anyway, there we go. So coming up next, music wise it's Squeeze with Cool for Cats, and this was the first band he saw live. He calls them the Unknown Band. That's when he saw them. So that was Squeeze, and this is the final part of the interview, having had about half an hour with Andrew. Also, this is what's the future hold for the Isle of Wight Meat Company.
Thanks very much, Andrew, for that explanation, going through the sort of the provenance and the process, because I think that is something people will like to hear. Given everything that we talked about in terms of the economic climate and doing the business that you do and the processes you go through, the animals, the farming and everything else, what do you think the future is for the business, or what's your plans for the future for the business?
I think at the moment the plan for the future is to try and survive this current situation, which is a challenge for everybody. But I think, being a farmer, I don't really understand marketing. I don't really understand getting on it. So I feel in a lot of ways we're a bit of a best kept secret, which isn't a great marketing strategy. So we want to do a lot more about letting people know what we're about, who we are, and how they can be involved. It's all about choice. People can look at what we're doing and how we're doing it, and if they decide it's not for them and they're not interested in our products or the Isle of Wight brand or whatever, then that's perfectly fine. They can always go somewhere else. But I think if they can understand what we're trying to do, it's not all about me, it's not all about the farm.
No.
It is all about the Isle of Wight. It's about the wider economy, and I think that if we all support one another, we all benefit from that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I know that feels a little bit like we're looking at the world through like rose-tinted spectacles, but let's aim for that if it makes us all happier there.
Yeah, I mean, the conversations I've had, and there have been very few, but for this podcast, it's been very much the same approach. It's not just about the business or them. It's about the wider economy, the Isle of Wight and beyond. And I think that I'm hoping that's going to be a thread that's going to come through all of the conversations that I have, because I think there's a certain amount I don't know whether it's because it is the island and there's a finite number of people here all year round, so therefore there is that sort of closeness and community to help each other out.
Yeah, and I think we all feel attached to one another. Yeah. People running the businesses are passionate about the fantastic place that we live and the potential for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the future is to try and have a good, secure business that anybody working here with a fantastic team that we've got, whether it's our lorry drivers, chefs, or the cleaner who comes in at the end of the day, really bought into this business, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And if they know that they're secure and we're all heading in the same direction, then that's I will feel I've achieved something when I get to that
point. Well, I think you're well down that road. So. Well,
that's good of you to say. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for your time today, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I'd like to thank Andrew again for his time and his very very open and honest answers. And I think it's interesting to hear somebody who's a farmer running a fairly complex business now, not just meat, but all the other bits and pieces that go with it, retail and so on. So, yeah, I take my hat off to him. And I think he's got a tremendous operation there. And obviously the team are really doing the all the good things to help him as well. So that's great. The first episode was called Flower Power, and that was about the water mill at Calbourne. And I've heard from Sally Chaucer that they're now crowdfunding for the cost of a major repair to the main water wheel. The main water wheel is essentially a cast iron piece of the mill, and it's the largest part. And that part of it shattered. The wheel was cast in about 1880, I think it was, and it's lasted a long time, but obviously, as with all things, they tend to get a bit tired and fail, so that's what's happened with this. They're really in need of help from anyone who's interested in getting the wheel repaired and getting the mill back into a full working order. So if you want to help through a donation through their crowdfunding page, please do. Every pound will help. And you can find the page at www.crowdfunder.co.uk/p/, and then it's the word save hyphen the hyphen water hyphen mill. So please have a go along there, and if you feel you can spare a pound, that would be great. If 60,000 people did it, that would be £60,000. If 50,000 people, that'd be £50,000. That would be wonderful. And really hope that you feel that you could help contribute by going to the crowdfunder page. In the meantime, podcast is moving on, and the next episode will be about Blueberries in Shanklin, which is a family-run cafe, a lovely couple, and I enjoyed talking to them, and they really got the cafe working really, really well, and they did work right the way through COVID in as much as they could do when they were allowed to open. They did all the things that were right to be operating in COVID times, and they have this, I think it was something like over 100 different types of cakes. So if you like cakes, that's a great place. And the cafe is situated overlooking the sea at Shanklin. So that's who we'll be talking to. And we'll be finding out how they got into that and why they're doing it. Don't forget, I'm also on Sunshine Radio, iow.com, which is the hospital radio at St Mary's in Newport, and you can listen to that on the internet. So if you go to Sunshine Radio, iow.com, and look for the listen page, there is a streaming section there you can click on, and it comes straight over the internet to you. My program's on Thursday afternoons at 3 o'clock. And if you want to email me, foodandmusiciow@gmail.com. And that's it. So thanks very much for listening, and hope you'll be listening into the next episode. In the meantime, take care and be safe. Bye. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Food and Music podcast. Very pleased that you took the time to do that, and so grateful for your ears. Thank you very much indeed. I've got some more exciting episodes planned coming up over the next few weeks and months. And if you would like to share this podcast with friends or family, it's available on Spotify, Amazon, Google, or Apple, and a couple of other platforms. So Thank you very much for doing that, and I really appreciate your time, and look forward to you listening again to the next episodes of the podcast.